Have you ever wondered where the term podcast comes from? It's an interesting story. You see, the word originates from the Greek word podimus, which is a giant mythical moose-like creature with golden antlers. So that's just a little history lesson from me to you. Enjoy the podimus. Welcome to the podcast that is guaranteed to improve not only your photography, but your mind, body, and spirit as well. Full of interviews with the top image makers in the industry, where we talk photography, drink whiskey, and fill up the bathtub with High Life and PBR. So grab a juice box, a handful of unsalted almonds, and get ready for the show.
We are back finally, David. Do you remember when we were here a few years ago and COVID popped?
I do remember that.
Oh my God.
This was the last thing that we did before the world shut down. Oh.
And the bathtub really was filled.
It was really filled. Now we're drinking water. Yeah. Well, John Grass is our guest for this new season. Thank you for joining us.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
And we've also got David fresh off the plane.
Just did it.
We just got out. We just filled up the bathtub with water and things to stay hydrated. So I think a few things have changed since the whiskey days.
Yeah. Yeah. We've gotten a little older, a little wiser.
Yeah. I think I drank too much during COVID. How about you guys? Just a little too much. John, how'd you do?
Maybe. I mean, I don't actually need to answer that because you were there for most of it. So
since I'm married to a non-drinker, I hardly get to drink at all. And when I do, it's kind of a mess.
Oh, lucky you.
like Vegas is happening drinking?
No, like because I'm on a very cheap date. Like all I need is like maybe two drinks and I'll be feeling it.
All right.
Yeah.
Taking you out later.
Yeah.
All right, John, let's start from Baby John. Baby John photographer. How did you get into photography?
So I borrowed my mom's camera actually to go to summer camp when I was probably around 13 or so. She had a Vivitar point-and-shoot camera, and I was a very unpopular kid, probably like the fifth most least popular, something like that.
So there was a list. You had a list going.
There's a list. I wasn't quite as bad
from the bottom?
As the worst person, but yeah. I was close.
Fifth from the bottom's not bad. Was it a class of like 10?
No. Like it was right like in the middle? 400 or something.
Oh.
Yeah.
What made you so unpopular? What were you doing?
I don't know. I think I was just always a fat, nerdy kid.
Was it just in your head that you weren't popular?
I don't think so.
All right.
But yeah, anyway, I had this camera and I felt like it was a great way for me to go up to people and start talking to them and engage in a conversation. And so I loved doing it. And then somewhere in there, probably because my grandma would watch me after school. And so I grew up watching the news all the time and being exposed to politics and that sort of thing. And so I was like, I think I might want to be a newspaper photographer. So I started off doing the school newspaper thing. And then first time I ever got paid to take a picture was for the weekly newspaper, either shooting a car accident or a football game. I don't know which one.
You don't remember which one. Those are two very different things. But one is scheduled and the other one, you have to be there real quick.
But I'm guessing it was the football game. But in that period of time, during my high school time, that's what I would do. I would shoot like house fires and football games and baseball games and that sort of thing.
And where is this at?
So that's in the Portland, Oregon suburbs.
So. All right. So football and car accidents. Yeah, that's what the newspaper is.
And a good house fire.
And a good house fire.
It was a weekly newspaper.
So how bad does an accident have to be to warrant the kid photographer coming out?
So not so bad, actually. Not so bad.
Benders.
There's not a lot of news happening in Portland.
There must have been not a lot of news going on back then. Not
maybe
like
just
the
someone
last few years.
Trapped in the car, maybe.
Oh. And so instead of helping, you're there taking photos.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Although I think one time I did go to a brush fire, and I had to help them move the hose or something.
Wow.
So.
Photojournalism like and hero rescue.
Teenage years at this point?
Yeah, I think I was like 17, give or take.
All right. Yeah. For a minute there, I thought you were like 8. Back when we were kids and we could wander anywhere and not have parents,
like when you got when you got kicked out of the house at 8 a.m. and then like you couldn't come back till the streetlights came on, you
were
out there.
The days.
We were BMXing. He was shooting brush fires, and moving hoses.
Oh man! So
yeah.
Kids these days though they don't get to go out and run around.
It's actually illegal in a ton of places.
for kids to be unsupervised?
You can get arrested as a parent in several states if you let your kids just like go to the playground and you're not there to witness it. It's insane.
I think those are the good old days people are talking about.
I think when you look at the stats, though, like the odds that a child will get kidnapped is nothing.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. It
was worse back then.
Here comes random facts of David. Like, violent crimes have significantly decreased in the last 20 years because you can't get away with it, number one. I mean, let's just be real. If you're going to leave behind something, you're not going to get away with it. But it's dramatically decreased. However, the research shows that our intake of the issues that have happened has increased, right? Because news travels so quickly everywhere. So it feels like you're saturated and it happens every single day, but you're absorbing news from across the entire country instead of your local area. But it like hardly ever happens. Mm. There you go.
I'm tired of the news. That makes total sense. All right, so we're in Portland,
yeah.
Car accidents.
And then back to the news, I guess. So yeah, because I decided that I wanted to be a photojournalist and I wanted to either be a sports photographer or a political photographer. And so a few years after the brush fire, there was a flood. And my high school photography teacher was a freelancer for the Associated Press. And he introduced me to the photographers there because I got a picture of somebody shaking a cat out of a tree in a canoe. And
in a canoe?
They were in a canoe and they shook the cat out of the tree and then they caught it.
The canoe?
Are they over water or is it just a canoe in a front yard?
No. They were, I was on a bridge. They were in the water. So
this rescued. Makes way more sense to
I know, doesn't it? If I would only tell the story correctly at the beginning, this would go so much better.
I was literally picturing they were holding the canoe above their head and they're like shaking the cat.
Yeah, we all had very different visuals going on.
Yeah, so they decided that they liked me and they would take me under their wing. So during college, the two photographers that worked there on staff, they would teach me things and I would freelance for them. And I started having a little bit different requirement when I went to car accidents. So, for instance, I think 3 people had to die. That was the limit. Yeah. So.
And it had to be before golden hour.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So that was the bar. It wasn't newsworthy unless that happened. But that was a good experience. I did that through college, and then I got a job at a newspaper in Topeka, Kansas, which is a very horrible place. Yes. I don't know.
Yeah.
Sorry to the Kansas people.
Yeah, my sister went to KU, so Lawrence isn't too far away from Topeka. So I've spent. Yeah, there's nothing there.
Okay, well, it's not a horrible place. It's just, it's like you said, a nothing there place with a very high crime rate.
Yeah.
And, I remember one of the photographers of the newspaper said that he wanted to make a bumper sticker that said, the best part about Topeka is seeing it in the rearview mirror while I'm driving to Lawrence.
Yeah, I would agree.
So, yeah, so after maybe 8 or so months there, the supervisor that I had, he and I did not get along very well.
And you're still in college at this point?
No, I was done I had just gotten done
with
college.
And where did you go to college?
Portland State.
Portland State, okay.
Yeah, so where I got a political science degree because it was the only thing that was relevant that that they offered that I liked. So I worked at this newspaper. I photographed the Kansas State football team, all sorts of random things.
How did you do it back then?
Oh, so that was film.
Yeah, no, and but like, how was your posing? Like, what did it look like?
Oh, no, I was shooting the games.
Okay.
So I shot every game that Kansas State played, whether it was home or away.
Got it.
So not like you had to drive from like Topeka down to Manhattan and then like shoot?
Yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
And
that's an hour drive.
And I remember going to College Station, Texas, and Columbia, Missouri, and all of the finer places in the Midwest. Yeah.
And so did you have to have everything developed that night for print the next day?
Yeah, so it was an interesting time where we'd shoot film if it was a day game, and then if it was a night, we'd shoot digital on a camera that was 1.3 megapixels and shot 2.5 frames per second.
So it's rough for sports.
Yeah.
At night.
Yeah. So, no, it was very rough, and the pictures were terrible. Like the people were magenta. They had all this noise and it was pretty much, it'd be unusable today, but it was fine then for newsprint. And that was going pretty well. And then I just didn't get along with the supervisor very well. Well, okay. So I'll tell the story since I kind of walked up to it. So me and another photographer, we were shooting the pack, No, it's not called Pac-12. What is it called? Big 12. Big 12 championship game. And we missed the deadline because one of the other photographers didn't like us. And so he deep sicked us, basically. So then the supervisor, like, totally went ballistic and started screaming at us, like, getting in our face and all of this stuff. So I basically was like, okay, like, I'm not going to deal with this anymore. So I went back to freelancing. So because before that, I was freelancing for AP, and I would shoot things for the New York Times or People Magazine or things like that.
But you're a big dude. Was he, like, actually in your face, or is he talking to you, like, your chest?
Well, I was technically sitting on the counter in the dark room.
Oh, gotcha.
And, he, like, got, like, right between my legs. It was, like,
so what are
me.
The reasons of him not liking you? What happened here? I feel like we're glossing over the details. Were you late a lot?
I was a little cocky for the most part. I think so. At 22 years old, I thought I knew everything. Yep. I know what it's like. It's funny now being now 1 year more than double that age. When I encounter that person, I have sympathy for them. I understand where they're coming from. That young person who thinks they know everything. But it was a little bit of that. It was also a little bit that the 30-year-old photographers didn't like the 22-year-old photographers that were coming in there. So that sort of thing. It was a mix of the old school way versus maybe people that want to do things a little differently. So
yeah. People don't like that.
No.
Young kids doing things.
No, yeah. Not at all. And I'm sure that I was in the wrong half the time. And I'm sure part of it was that they didn't have a very nice personality.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it was a mix of the two. But I went back to freelancing and I moved back to Portland because there was a new weekly newspaper or bi-weekly newspaper in Portland that they were looking for photographers. So I went back to shooting for AP about half the time and shooting for them about a third of the time and getting in where I fit in the rest of the time. But then I was sort of in a position where I might get a full-time job for AP. And I, because one of my mentors retired. And then at the last second, they decided they were going to transfer somebody there from DC. It's like a union thing. And so I got pushed out. So then there went most of my income at that point. So I started asking my mentors, like, where should I go? And they were like, oh, well, talk to this guy who's in charge of photography for North America for Reuters. So that's the person I ended up talking to. And he was like, oh, well, we could use a photographer in New York, DC, or Chicago. But if you go to Chicago, you'll be the one person. You won't be one of eight. So I thought that sounded pretty good. So I ended up going there with the idea that they would hire me about 15 days a month, give or take. And so I started doing that. It ended up being more than that. And for a while, if there was a big news event or sports event within 600 miles, I definitely went to it. If it was further, I possibly went to it. I think I shot the Super Bowl and the Stanley Cup and I think I've shot every major sports. I haven't shot the NBA Finals. Anything else in sports except for the Masters and the NBA Finals I've shot, I think.
Wait. In all that time in Chicago, you never got to do an NBA.
No, because
the Bulls sucked.
It was too late.
Post Jordan.
Yeah, it was the Derrick Rose time.
When he was injured for 90% of the time.
Yeah.
Yeah, post Jordan's dark. Yeah. So you're still in Chicago.
Yeah. So ended up being that through that 2008 recession, I didn't feel it quite at first because I was photographing the presidential election, and then I was in the Obama motorcade, if you will, every day for a long time. So I had all this work. And then as soon as he went to the White House.
Was that through AP as well?
That was for Reuters.
Okay.
But as soon as he went to the White House, then like all of my work went away, or a lot of it. And I was feeling that recession.
Thanks, Obama.
Yeah, right? Exactly. Exactly. You know, I pull that out all the time.
Yeah, it's fun.
So around this time, was this when you started getting like some interest or some work in shooting professional athletes? Because I know, like, when I first started following your work, that was more what you did, is you shot, like, professional athletes, like, more Sports Illustrated style kind of stuff. Was that when you were shooting that sort of stuff back then, or that kind of evolved from that?
It did sort of evolve from that. So in 99, I got my very first lights. And from 99 to 2007, I was photographing business people or people that were in the news and that sort of thing. And then my friend said to me, I want to be a fashion photographer. Would you teach me lighting? So the first night we went out, he was the photographer and I was the model. And after about, we eventually found people that wanted to have their picture taken. And then after a little bit after that, he was like, you know, I don't really need to know all this technical stuff. This is stuff like you need to know for your Reuters job. Like, I just want to feel the pictures and I'm going to go to Paris to find myself. Like, totally arbitrary. But so that was the end of our time working together. But I realized that I sort of found myself because I learned that I loved working with models because they didn't want me to perform a 5-minute drive-by shooting. They would actually sit there and let me.
Or a car accident.
Yeah, exactly.
Or a brush fire.
Yeah. Or a canoe.
Yeah, exactly.
A canoe brush fire.
A canoe brush fire.
With a cat.
Yeah. And later a tornado. But yeah, no, they would. They would let me, you know, sit there and develop the shot and work on the lighting and sort of figure out what I was doing. And so it really, it was a lot of fun and it helped me grow. And so during that whole recession time, I was spending, I did about 2 test shoots a week for free with people that I would find on Model Mayhem, which was sort of the Instagram of its time.
It and still looks exactly the same.
I'm sure
it has not changed one bit.
I don't know why it hasn't changed. It has
they don't
such
put any
potential.
Money into it.
Silly.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, so... so I kept doing that and my skills got a lot better during that period of time. And then I sort of fell off that wagon and started to shoot video and started to figure out lighting for video and how that was different with continuous lights that weren't LEDs that you could dim because they were still hot lights then or Kino flows, fluorescent lights. And so, then one day my friend said, you should get on Instagram. And I'm like, nah, I got this Facebook business page. Like, I don't need to do yet another thing. I'll just, you know. And then finally I relented. So then I got on Instagram.
Back in the glory days.
Yes, in 2015.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And so I, this is a long answer to your question.
That's good.
So, yeah. So I got on there and I realized, if I post these behind-the-scenes photos, I get a lot of attention. And then I ran out of content, so then I started shooting the models again every week. And so I would do it all the time, and I would post behind-the-scenes photos, and I'd get more attention, and I thought that was great. I thought I would get on Instagram, and I would find people that wanted to hire me to take pictures, and I had no idea that I was going to develop a
community?
Yes, there you go, that were photographers. Like, I had no idea that's what was going to happen. Around that same period of time, my friend who talked me into getting onto Instagram, he and I used to shoot sports together for Reuters. He now shoots for Sports Illustrated. But his former coworker at Agence France-Presse, he became the art director for the trading card company. And then he ended up hiring us both to shoot portraits of athletes for their trading cards, which I...
Oh, you've shot trading cards?
Yeah.
Which ones?
So, well...
What company?
Yes, so it's Panini is the company. Okay. So I believe that's Donruss and their own line, I believe.
Yeah.
So I guess I left that out too. When I was a teenager, my friend was all into getting autographs. So we would go to the Blazer games afterwards and we would try to get cards signed by the players. And then when they had the Dream Team with Jordan and... I don't know who else was
Scottie
on
Scottie Pippen.
And Karl Malone and, yeah.
Oh, the Olympic Dream Team.
Yes, yeah. So they were, like, doing the Olympic qualifying in Portland, and I went there, and I was like, maybe I'll take my mom's camera and take pictures of them and then get them to sign them the next day.
Did you shoot the Dream Team?
Like coming and going from a bus. It wasn't like, I was still, like, 14 or something.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so... So it's funny, though, that then 20 years later, I would end up shooting the trading cards that I used to collect as a kid. And only this time, I had no idea who these people were. So, like, I remember shooting Ezekiel Elliott and going, like, you're a running back, right? Just by looking at the number and how his body was, you know, shaped.
You can't even do that anymore.
Yeah.
The numbers are all over the place now.
Oh, they are now. Okay, yeah. See? I'm going to do this in a month or two, and I guess I'll have to figure out who
the numbers
are.
The numbers don't make sense at all anymore.
I'll just be looking
for
at
what sport?
For the NFL.
What did they used to be?
They used to be like more, you had isolated down to kind of positions.
Yeah, it wasn't like the linemen were all like in the 60s or 70s.
And then like all of the running backs were like in the teens. And
so now
like
it's anyone can be any number they want?
Anywhere. It's all over the place.
And how do you feel about that, David? It seems like you're pretty upset about it.
I thought I had figured it out, and then you changed the game. Like, I, you know. Jeez.
You're a big Packers fan, aren't you, David?
I'm a Packers fan, yeah.
All right, so what are you shooting in a few weeks?
But you can't talk about that because there's a Chicago guy at the table. Come on.
What, are you a big Bears fan?
No, not at all.
He's not in anything.
Although one time I did shoot. Like, it's kind of ironic. I'm kind of a nothing. Yeah, I'm very agnostic now. Now that I don't shoot the sports for a living, I pay no attention to it. So I don't know. I was shooting a game at Green Bay when it was like 2 below 0. It was a playoff game against the Jets. And right before walking out to shoot the game, I put my bailout camera is what we called it. But it was like a 50 millimeter camera that you'd use when you were like, oh, shit, like, let me get out of the way. And you would shoot with it. I put that around my neck and then I went to grab my hood from my parka. And I pulled up on it, and when I did it, it pulled the camera up into my mouth and chipped my tooth and split my lip.
Oh, wow.
So I'm going out.
You're fitting in Green Bay.
So I was so worried as I'm walking out to shoot this game with a ski mask on that I was going to end up having red ice on my face.
Yeah. That's a... It's actually probably a real thing. And you wouldn't be the only one in the stands.
Probably not.
It'd be all right.
So what does your work look like today? What are you doing most of the week, most of the month? Where's your income come from?
Yeah, so I actually just did all of my bookkeeping for last year because I'm definitely a procrastinator and it was time to do my taxes. And I discovered that for the first time I make half of my income from teaching others or some avenue of teaching others, whether that's teaching workshops or my website, The Academy with John Gress, where you can subscribe every month, or lighting handbooks, or...
And how new is that?
YouTube videos. So it's actually just turned 2 years old.
And so, how's it going?
Pretty good. I mean, all of these things
are
like...
Are you the dean of the Academy?
I am the dean of the Academy.
And are you the head instructor?
Yes,
And are you the bookkeeper?
Yes, actually.
Are you the promoter?
And the promoter.
Man, you got a lot of jobs.
Yeah, it's a lot of jobs, but it's better than Trump University.
Because it's actually still open.
I think that's true.
Do you dish out steaks at the Academy?
Yes.
There's a lot at stake.
There's a lot at stake, especially during the critiques. Yeah.
So there's a lot of education going on at the Academy. So half of it is in-person or digital as well?
So the in-person workshops is about half of my education,
income stream.
Yeah. Yes, exactly. And then the other half is all digital things, whether it's lighting handbooks or YouTube or Amazon revenue or the Academy. So
you getting that YouTube money?
Oh yeah, whole $600 a month on a good month.
Yeah, it takes a lot to make money off YouTube.
Oh, it's definitely not worth it.
Yeah.
How much viewership do you have to get for that $600?
So about
a penny of what? It's a penny.
About 80,000 views a month.
Wow, for $600.
Yeah,
that's a lot of streaming for $600.
You gotta produce a lot of content to make a little amount of money.
Yeah,
people do it because they want to be known.
Right.
Okay for it.
I get that.
Yeah,
just saying that's a hustle.
It's kind of like how.
And John has some like high quality YouTube videos too, so he's putting some effort into
it. I compare it to the camera companies or the name brands that sell a lot of camera gear that convince you to do a lot of these really big video reviews for like a 2% affiliate fee. When you really do the math, you're like, what am I making commercials for you for 2%? Yeah. Get out of here with that. You know, you're just like, but you get to keep the gear for a week. Anyway, I digress.
Yeah.
So how do your, I know from personal experience how some of your workshops at work, but like, how do you book your own workshops? Are you reaching out to like photographers who have studios in certain cities? Are people reaching out to you? I mean, I've had you at my studio, yeah. So I know how that relationship worked, but like, how do you typically do it?
For the most part, I'm just finding, trying to think if there is really a typical way that it's happening. Mostly it's, I find a studio, think through this. I'm just going to muddle the whole thing. Usually I meet someone who has a studio somewhere or they've asked me to come there and then I go there. So
okay,
basically
gotcha.
It's just...
So it's kind of the same way that we did it.
Yeah.
It's usually somebody reaching out saying, hey, come on down.
For the most part, okay. Yeah.
If you scroll to the very, very bottom, Uber, there's a John button.
Yeah, there is.
Order a John.
Yeah. It's not always this John, but you get a John.
It's only in some states.
About half of them.
Yeah.
Yeah, so, and then on the YouTube part, like, I never wanted to be on camera. Like, I shied away from pictures my whole life, which probably was, I shouldn't have done that, but I guess we all have our insecurities, I guess. And I just decided when I started teaching the workshops that, like, well, I guess I better do YouTube so people actually know who I am and what I look like and will connect with me. So even though it's only making $600 a month, like, it's worth it to not only help people through their struggle, but also to just connect with more people. Yeah.
Well, YouTube is probably the most powerful just for leads and getting people to your academy and the website.
Definitely a lead gen. I feel like that's 90% of what YouTube is now, is either on multiple fronts, like, yeah. Not just the photographer front. Like, I see these video gamers that are streaming stuff. Like, all they're trying to do is get you to sign up for their subscription service. You know, YouTube used to be just this, hey, we're putting stuff out there for free, and maybe, like, ad dollars will help pay for it. But now it's just, like, you know, legion.
It's more just, than just what's up, guys, now.
Yeah. everybody's still what's up, guys, but that's their standard.
What's your YouTube opening? Is it what's up, guys?
Welcome back, everyone. In today's video, we're going to talk about...
Yeah, this is professional.
That's way better.
Yeah.
What's up, guys?
This is professional.
You practiced it. Is that the only one, or do you have multiple? You got a whole bag.
Usually it's that, and I get stuck on it.
Yeah. It's hard to open up with a good catchphrase.
Yeah.
I don't have one.
Me neither. I don't make YouTube.
And then I try not
either.
To say guys a lot.
Yeah. Yep.
But I never succeed. But yeah.
So how did you, you went from sports to, I mean, you do shoot women, but you mostly shoot men. How did that evolution happen? I mean, I guess mostly the sports were mostly men as well, but.
Yeah. So basically, like, I would try to do those test photo shoots with the models, let's say back in 2008 to 2010. And it was a lot to get a model, a stylist, a hair person, and a makeup person all together at the same time to do the women's shoot. And a lot of times you'd lose one of those links and then you'd have to start over again and try to get the you know, the free collab day going again. So it was a struggle, but when I photographed men, for the most part, I felt like I could style them, and then I kind of learned how to do their makeup if I needed to, and so then I could do it all by myself. But I still collaborated with stylists and sometimes makeup artists. It's just that I knew that I could step in and keep things going if it was just me alone. And then I think I got asked to speak at PPA, Imaging USA, and I think somebody said... basically, like, I kept hearing from people when I started going to these conferences about how great it was that I shot mostly men because nobody did that. And then I kind of realized that was my niche that I probably needed to keep going with. Although I feel like I want to mix it up, and we'll probably mix it up in the next few years. Just like now my goal is sort of to try to do not just fly by the seat of my pants, which is what I usually do during these tests. Like, I probably am going to try to have more of a theme. Like, the other day we were watching The Perfect Match, I think it is, on Netflix. I'm sure your wife might make you watch this. But we watch all these dating
It's not
flows.
Animated. We don't get to watch it at all.
Oh, okay.
Not even after dark?
No.
After 8?
What are you talking about? 8? 8, that's lights out.
Oh, you're in bed at 8?
I'm on an average day.
Both of you.
Lights out. Yes, sir. Yeah.
At 8?
We put those little trophies in bed.
So you're getting an 8? 8 hours of sleep a night, at least.
I wake up.
What time you wake up?
4:30 every day.
Oh my god!
Every day.
I'm inspired.
It's terrible.
Yeah. That sounds awesome and terrible all wrapped
well,
in one.
So I mean, you are a father, so you should remember this time. But like, I find the only way I can have any time to myself, and I'm talking 100% to myself. I love my wife, but I want alone time. Only way I can get it is at 4:30 every morning. I set my alarm. I wake up. Get up, make coffee, and then I just do me. Like, that's my time. Anything like that. Come on, dude. But that's my time. I'm reading the news. I'm reading a book. Like,
David's
I'm doing
time.
Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
But no, I feel like every human being would benefit, and there's actually some research to support it, but I really feel like we need time to ourselves and in quiet, because...
We'll be right back after this commercial break.
ProEDU.com makes photography tutorials. I'm not talking about that YouTube WhatsApp guy stuff either. I'm talking the real education you get from years of experience. From those that have been there, failed there, and learned from it. ProEDUs like David Lynch and Lynda.com made a baby. That's ProEDU. ProEDU once got a call from an Ivy League photography professor asking if he could use their classes to teach from. ProEDU told him to take a hike. We don't work for free. I don't know about you, but I take comfort in that. ProEDU.com. Taking her easy for all us photographers. Check out ProEDU.com and use the code DUDE to get 15% off your first tutorial.
I think a lot of we're programming ourselves to have like digital ADHD. So people who have never had ADHD in their life, we're starting to experience the same symptoms because you have this constant input. And in order to be creative, I think you need time alone for your brain to process all of the information that you've absorbed. I mean, daily, weekly, whatever. So I think if you spend, if you find some quiet time, an hour a day where it's just you and you're not looking to input data during that time, whether it's just sitting in quiet, enjoying your coffee, or maybe you're reading. A lot of times I read.
Doing you.
Yeah, just doing you. Exactly. Doing you. But you will find that your brain starts to release a lot of the information that you've gathered. And you'll find, I think you just find yourself and your flow a lot more by simply being quiet in a moment and not trying to experience other things.
Yeah, 100%.
And if you just set your phone aside for an hour when you wake up, oh, so nice.
I feel very bad for my friends a lot of times because they'll text me and I'll respond back to them like 5 hours later.
Right, but why do we feel bad about that?
Well, yeah.
Like, remember back in the day, I mean, like again, we're going to age ourselves, but back in the day, you had to call somebody and hope they were home. And if they weren't, it was just like, okay, yeah, he wasn't home.
That was when answering the phone was fun.
Right, but
you would race to the phone to see who it was.
But it wasn't a big deal if you didn't answer. Now it's like a big deal if you don't answer.
I leave my shit on Do Not Disturb.
All the time.
No one.
All the time.
There's like three people that get through.
Yeah.
Everyone else straight to voicemail.
When they started that focus mode thing, I love it. I love to just put it on focus mode. I love the fact that when I put it on focus mode, it goes across to all the devices in my house. Like my computer, my iPad, my phone, everything shuts off.
Davy time.
Focus mode.
Where he gets in his canoe and
rescues cats.
Do you share the same opinion of David? Are you like tired of the social media, of the notifications?
So I don't have those notifications on. But usually like if I sit down at the computer to work on something, like that's what I work on until I need a break from it. And then I'll look at the other thing.
But I think that's organized time, right? Like you're setting aside that time to answer those things, do that thing. That to me is productive versus if you have these alerts and everything on all the time, then it's a constant distraction. It's just stealing your focus all day, every day at random intervals. So again, that's where I think you're getting into that digital ADHD where I'm focused here and then all of a sudden I get this alert and it's become so normal for us. That we accept it, but we don't have to accept it. We can just say, like, during this time, I'm not going to do this. I'm just going to shut it down. And
it all started with email and Gmail specifically.
Yeah.
Notifications started coming, and you'd get an email at night. Let's say you were working, you get an email from work. Before that, if you got contacted at home and it was work, I was like, oh, shit. Is there a car accident?
Yeah.
Do I need to go photograph this car accident? So then Gmail started giving you notifications. Then you would start to respond to things. Oh, I'm just going to get it done now. And like now all of the different ways that get notifications. The world's smartest people are engineering ways to hack into your attention.
Yep.
And it does feel good, the dopamine. But I personally am way past that. And I'm just like, I would prefer not to have these in my life at all,
yeah,
for the most part.
Yeah, except when
go
I need them.
Back to record players.
Yeah, when I need them, then I'll check in on it.
Yeah.
Remember those BlackBerry people that were just very militant?
Yeah.
Well, you need to get your email.
Yeah.
Like, you didn't get my email 3 minutes ago? Why didn't you respond?
I remember when the Army gave me a BlackBerry and was like, I'm a professional bullet catcher, and now you gave me a BlackBerry and you want me to respond, like, on the dime.
Professional bullet catcher?
Yeah.
You need to, like, hey, pick yourself up. go the other way.
Oh. I thought you were
how that works?
Bullet thrower.
Yeah. That sounds bullet more violent.
Flinger.
Flinger, yes.
Yeah. Launcher.
Launcher, yeah.
Bullet launcher.
Yeah. All right. All right. So back to photographing men.
Meanwhile.
Meanwhile in Chicago. So you think you're going to switch? You're going to do something else?
No, I think I'll probably photograph more women, but I probably will stay in my lane a little bit. So what I was going to say earlier is I'm watching that show on Netflix, and I see how they sort of design the set and how it looks in the background. It was basically like, oh, I could kind of make the same thing. Essentially, all I got to do is like take like three auto poles and put white foam core boards on them and put a white backdrop behind it and then light that with gels in two spots. Mm. And now all of a sudden I have all these shapes and this color gradient going on in the background. And that, I'm like, okay, well, I'm going to do a shoot like that. And maybe this designer who hit me up the other day, I saw his clothing was all like shiny black leather, pleather things. And I'm like, those two things that go together. So I just want to spend more time kind of thinking about, like, how do I make it more than just me winging it when I see the clothes and I look at what I have in the studio and figure out how to put it together.
That's the hardest thing for me still to this day is I like to see everything together at one time. Like, you could send me the pictures of the outfit, and I just don't, until I see the model and the outfit, and then I look around the studio, and I'm like, okay, what can I do with
yeah.
this? It's so hard for me to visually try to build a scene until I start to see it. And then, of course, by the time you start to see it, I can't start planning. I have to go with whatever I got. And so I feel you there. That's so hard for me.
Yeah, I saw, I have a picture in my inspiration board from like 3 years ago. That's a guy at a table looking at a poker table, essentially, looking at his cards. There's chips there. There's some smoke in the air. And a girl's like leaning over talking to him, and she has on this brightly colored, shiny, like evening gown.
Like the sequined silver?
No, it's more like purple, but that's shiny purple.
I thought I had the same image somewhere in my Pinterest.
I think one of those is in my mood board, though, for the shoot. So then I thought, okay, what if I design this so it looks like a poker night in this green room that I just built, and then I've got layers of models, like some in the foreground, some in the background, and then this is the story, and this is the space, and I'll throw some smoke in there and maybe a black pro mist filter or something, and I'll just see what happens. But maybe sort of giving myself more scenarios to play in than just winging it.
You mentioned earlier something about continuous light that I recently am loving. And I'm finding myself, well, because we shoot video, using continuous light a lot. But I think with photography specifically, I think the last few years with continuous light have been really exciting because you can get really awesome lights for pretty reasonable. And it's not the Ari burn my epidermis off hot, you know, lights that we used to use. So what are you using mostly now? Is it a lot of constant, good mix, or what?
I've rarely used constant to shoot photos, mostly because I'm just very old school in my thinking that I want to be at 100 ISO and F8 a lot of the times, that I just want that detail. But I have used them. I think they probably would be great for gel stuff for the most part, like because it is more what you see is what you get. But I haven't gone down that
just
road
for,
yet.
For video is what you're most using for? How much video are you doing?
So since half of what I do is teach others, so usually half of what I do is shoot videos of me shooting photos with flash. So
similar. Samesies.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. So, you know, it's funny, like the first time that I did a shoot, and I did a collab video with Manny Ortiz, and he was like, oh no, I do them all myself. I just use two cameras on two tripods. And he's like, you should just do that too. You don't need someone helping you out shooting behind the scenes video. And I was like, oh, okay, I could do that. The first few times I did it, it was like, oh, fuck, this is a lot of stuff. Because I got to think about, what does this camera look like? What do I look like? How is my makeup looking? Is my audio good? What's that camera showing? What's the photo I'm shooting? What do I need to put in this photo?
Do you mark off little points on the floor and where you got to go and be perfect frame?
Oh, no, now I just kind of like, so now I have a monitor and a switcher so I can see the camera angles at the same time. And I kind of just know, like, this one is going to be over my shoulder. It's going to be manually focused on the model. This one will be from 90 degrees from the side. It'll show us both. And then I just added a GoPro from the top down. So it's like a real-time lighting diagram. And then I just sort of roll with that. So
nice. So there's no one running your cameras.
No. Oh. And it's...
That must be nice.
Yeah.
So who's on your team? Are you doing the editing as well?
So I actually just decided last week that I was going to outsource my retouching. And I had never wanted to give up control of that. And I had sort of the same revelation. Well, around, okay, well, to step back, I guess, how we said I just did my numbers for last year and now I'd figure this out. And I was like, you know, I can actually hire someone now to do my admin, and I can hire someone to do my retouching, and then I won't work 60 hours a week.
Yep.
So that's exactly where I am right now. So I'm just sort of like getting someone going, doing my admin. I just found a retoucher with the help of my friend Deanna, who you'll be interviewing a little later. And so I feel great at the moment, knowing that I'm going to have less on my plate to do. And in finding the retoucher, I was sort of like, well, she can do it better than I can do it. And if I'm spending $2,000 a year to get my 400 pictures retouched, and that's 4 weeks of my life, that's probably worth it. So,
I saw on your website that you have an auto booking with a calendar of your time. So if someone wants to get a headshot, they can basically do the whole thing and never contact you first.
I would love that.
Isn't that on your website?
Yeah, no, it is.
Yeah.
No, I love it when they don't contact me.
Oh, yeah. So when did that come about, and how did you build it?
So around 2 years ago, I think I heard about the concept, and then I found a free plugin that somebody makes for WordPress, and I put the code in there just to see if it would work with PayPal and if people would use it. And then when I saw they did it, if I went to Acuity, which is the company that I use now, it costs about $165 a year. And I figured if I have one more booking because it's automated, then it pays for itself. And then I don't have to actually talk to anyone, and I don't have to send out reminder emails, and yeah, it's all pretty neat. So then it just sort of became figuring out like how to go about that, like what the packages should be. And then I heard from other people, like if you talk about your upgrade options at every point during the process, you're more likely to get them to upgrade. So when they book their session, when they look at the packages, right below that are the upgrade options. When they click on book now, it takes them to my calendar. On that page are the upgrade options. When they get their confirmation email, there are the upgrade options. When I send them the link to their gallery, upgrade options. And so it seems to work out pretty well. A lot of the people upgrade. A lot of the people don't talk to me beforehand. And I guess I like that part.
Do people have to put a deposit down?
They can pay a $150 deposit, or they can pay the entire amount if they want. Then the other great thing is that Acuity works really well with Stripe, so that it's as the credit card processor. And Stripe, then I was using Acuity and PayPal, but the problem is with PayPal, you can't charge them without sending them an invoice. If they use Stripe, now I only use Stripe, then it has the card there in Acuity, and it allows me to charge their card if I need to charge them for the balance or an upgrade without them giving me the card number again or anything like that. And I can never see the card number. So unlike the olden times, I'm not responsible for anyone's data, and I'm not paying Chase $25 a month for the privilege of running credit cards. So, I mean, I think it works out great. I'm always trying to encourage people to do it too. You can say in Acuity, like, I'm available from 9 to 5 on Wednesday through Saturday, which I think maybe when I'm available, give or take. And you can say how long your sessions are and whether you want to jump, you want a gap between your sessions or you don't want a gap between your sessions. You can tell it to make you look busier than you are if you want to. Like there's a whole bunch of customization. It talks to the Apple calendar, I think also the Google calendar. But if I put in my Apple calendar that I'm coming here for this podcast today or coming to WPPI, then it won't let people book sessions. So it's been great. I've been really glad that I've done it. And then I use it to book my workshops too. So
automation, it's the way of the future, David.
Yeah. So cool.
David, what do you automate in your life?
What do I not automate in my life? I mean, with the addition of ChatGPT, like I don't even have to write anymore.
You should have seen David the other day when he found out about it.
Yeah. When I, well,
we haven't talked about it yet.
I knew about it. I just started doing it. And
you haven't talked about the AI. How do you feel about this AI?
So I wrote my description for next year's Imaging USA, and then I sent it to my friend for feedback, and she wrote me back. She goes, "This is what the robot says you should write." So I read it. It took it a little technically far to the point that it wasn't true anymore.
I mean, I feel like it's a first draft. It's beyond a first draft, because let's face it, most of our first drafts are horrible. I feel like it's a second draft.
Speak
and then
for yourself,
like
David.
I've seen your first drafts.
and they're also my last drafts.
When it comes into like, you know, I mean, I don't feel like it's even supposed to be a place where humans don't exist anymore, but it gets you pretty far along, and then you kind of come in and edit and say, like, this is what I really want to say.
Yeah, well, I wrote my first draft. She gave me the second draft. I combined that with feedback from somebody else and wrote the final draft, so it seemed pretty good. I haven't used any of the photo AI things yet. A friend of mine was telling me about doing it, and it sounded like it was going to be its own skill.
It is. It's a lot, yeah. Yeah. Like, you're talking about full AI imaging, like Midjourney.
Midjourney.
Yeah, Midjourney is like all prompt writing and how you write your prompts.
For what you do, you're taking pictures of actual people that need actual pictures of themselves. You can't do that with Midjourney.
Okay.
You know what I mean? Like, you're not going to be able to just.
Well, I mean, I think he would benefit from the same thing that you and I are interested, though. And that's, can you create like a backdrop that you're now compositing a real person into? Like, that's what interests me the most. But
environments.
Yeah. So, getting an environment that you
composite.
Could, you know, I can composite my individual
composite,
in.
David,
my composite.
Right. Good.
Okay.
Good.
But I could generate a backdrop and send it to my new retoucher.
There
you go. $5, the two will meet.
There you go. Just hard to get the right angles and all that stuff. It's not there yet.
All right, so you got to get into the Midjourney.
Okay.
I think he knows about it. He just doesn't want to pick a side yet.
No. I literally have not gone to look at it, but everything I see, like, I think people are talking like they're, oh, this is going to steal our jobs, and I'm sort of looking at it like, I don't think so.
Yeah. I mean, I do think there's aspects, right? Like, as soon as Midjourney gets good enough for, like, I can feed, like, let's say I'm a designer, I can feed my image of my clothing in there, especially in, like, a 3D model, and then I can write prompts that will put it on a model, and it looks like a person, and it looks pretty good.
Yeah.
Like, those people might be in a little bit of trouble. If you're a person who's shooting portraiture of a real person and the real person is your consumer, I mean,
yeah, like I'm thinking if the AI generation requires an artist to do it,
right,
then why not have the artist make the real picture? So that's why I'm not so worried about it.
Yeah.
It's not going to steal. It's going to eliminate some jobs, but it's going to create so many more. So if you know how to use it, I think you're good.
Right. I mean, I think there's some industries it's going to squeeze into faster than others. But I mean, again, if you're photographing real people and those people you are photographing is your consumer, you're not threatened because it can't make an image of a person in a scene that they remember being in.
Not yet.
It's never going to be able to do that.
Good.
Never could.
Never say never, David.
It's impossible.
Never say never.
If the person wasn't actually sitting in the scene, they can't remember being in the scene.
You don't know that.
Unless the Matrix is coming in and we're plugging people into the back of their necks, it's never happening.
Yeah, that was like 10 years ago. That already happened. Get out of here, David.
I think the Matrix was like 20 years ago. It's a long time.
John, so what's next? What are you looking forward to the most in life right now?
Just figuring out how I go on this journey of getting people to help me do stuff. That's probably it.
Seems like you're doing all right at it.
Yeah. Well, at least
except
I got
running cameras.
At least I got a start. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like I don't think I'll ever be able to outsource. Well, I'd say this, but I guess eventually I could outsource the video editing. But a lot of it is like what I want to say. So it's not really.
With outsourcing video,
if you just say it right the first time and don't mess up, then there it is.
But outsourcing video, you still have to have a lot of input on because, and again, you're the one who was the director, right? You had the intent. You have to have a lot of say-so and feedback because they're basically developing a story that you might not have told them what the story is yet. And it's hard.
Yeah, no, I know what you mean. And I know what it's like when I have to record something that's 3 minutes long without a break. Yeah, that's a mess. So, this week I'm going to try to figure out how is it that I could shoot my photos at the studio upload them to one place, have someone cull them and do a color correction, send out previews to clients, and then get the raw file when needed and send that to the retoucher. And then all I do is push the button and upload the stuff. That's what I want to figure out.
Do you shoot tethered now?
This week, yeah.
Yeah, you just shoot to a folder that something is looking at, so it auto-uploads. Do you do that now?
I was going to see if Lightroom Mobile could do it. I was going to ask
my Pixie set integrates with Lightroom, and then you can develop galleries straight from that. Your clients can be looking at it.
Okay.
I don't know if Lightroom does, like, Capture One, you know, you adjust the first image, and then all the images that you take afterwards automatically have those adjustments, so I don't know if Lightroom does that yet.
I think it does. I went from Lightroom to Capture One, and now I'm thinking about going back, so.
I couldn't go back.
I don't know why there's two Lightrooms. They should call one of them.
That's what I don't understand either.
Light Folder.
Yeah, like Lightroom.
The other one's Lightroom, not Lightroom Classic.
Yeah,
I don't know why. They're so similar.
It. Yeah.
Just one goes to the cloud as well, which I like. Why didn't they just build that into Lightroom Classic? Why are there two of them?
That's what I'm wondering if...
I'm so excited about Capture One on the iPad now and the ability to tether directly to the iPad. And I don't, like, my last shoot I did, I just had this in my hand.
Okay.
Tethering straight to my iPad.
In the new Lightroom, which I am just now getting into because of the sharing, couldn't you set up, share a folder, and then shoot to that and have it be updating so it's updating the...
You could, but he's more worried about, like, a selection process, color correction and all that at the same time.
Oh, not exactly. What I'm thinking about...
I understood nothing he said then, apparently.
I know.
It's my fault. I don't necessarily want to upload 25 gigs of data and then have to have the editor download 25 gigs of data. I want to see if there's a way that I can upload that 25 gigs of data and the editor can access some sort of smart preview that's a low data footprint and then send the previews to the client, which you don't need high res. And then when the client picks out a picture, he can command the raw file to come to him.
So they both do proxies, like both Capture One and Lightroom create proxies. I just don't know if there's a way to send your proxies in a folder. So the proxy is just that. Just the low, you know, the image that you see on your screen pop up immediately without all of the data. I know it creates both of them because if you ever go in your Capture One library, you'll see the proxies in there. I've lost my hard drive before, and I can still go back and see I can still see the images, but I can't edit them anymore just because it's just the proxy left. But I don't know if you can share those with somebody. That's interesting. Maybe somebody out there will tell us.
He or she log into Lightroom Mobile.
Yeah.
And then access the stuff.
They can.
So
yeah.
Yeah, they can definitely do that. Just share the folder. Yeah.
Yeah.
Look at us solving problems.
Yeah.
All day.
That's.
All right. I think we're out of time, unfortunately, because you guys have a hot date tonight. What are you guys up to this week at WPPI?
Oh, we are going to go to Old Vegas this evening.
Oh, the Old Town.
Yes.
Old Town Vegas.
So like Fremont Street?
Yeah, we're going to go to Fremont Street after dinner, which is nearby.
That's where it's like kind of the outdoor lighting.
Yeah, I've never been to Fremont.
You haven't been there?
Never been there.
That's cool.
Oh, this is like Disney World over here. That's like the real thing over there. Oh. Smells like urine and cigarette butts. It is the best place.
I definitely want to sign up.
Let's go. You definitely should go.
You convinced me with the urine and cigarette butts.
There are people ziplining over the top of you.
I've seen
like
that
girls
part.
Trip urinating on people.
Oh.
Yeah, you know, try anything once.
You know.
Right, Dave?
No, there's some things I don't want to try, definitely.
John, where can everyone go to find your work and find you on the gram?
Yes, so Instagram is John Gress Media, and then if you want to check out my website, it's johngress.com, and there you can find the Academy. You also can find info about my workshops and my lighting handbooks, and soon I will be in Miami, San Diego, Charlotte, and Detroit teaching workshops.
Oh, nice.
And El Paso.
How far out?
And El Paso. Those are through April.
Through April. All right, this will be out by April.
Yeah.
We're actually live right now.
Okay, good.
No, I'm just kidding. All right, well, thank you for coming by. It was great to catch up, and hopefully we'll see you again this week.
Yeah, thank you. See you all soon. Right.
Correction, it seems I was mistaken about the origin of the word podcast. My producer is telling me that it's actually a combination of the words iPod and broadcast. But then again, my producer is an idiot who eats macaroni and cheese with chopsticks. I like potty mousse. Well, that's all for today's podcast. Join us next time for more interesting discussion about the wonderful world of photography and her dark magical secrets. I'm fascinated with Instagram. It's such a simple construct. Just take a picture and post it on the internet. The other day, I took a picture of my neighbor's pet rabbit. He told me not to post it, but, you know, I did anyway. Wow.